I just know that brought back a core memory of y'all sitting in front of the television Saturday morning, just in a daze, just mind blown. For like the next 4 or 5 hours until the stories come on, then you gotta get up and go out the house. I wanted to bring up something that I missed in the previous two episodes that listeners have brought to my attention. One was the bar mitzvah, saying that should we be doing the same ordinances and statutes when our children become a man as the Jews do? And absolutely not. There is nothing in scripture that says that we should do bar mitzvah. It is a tradition that was created. And when I looked it up years ago, because I wanted to know the same thing when I first was awakened, do we do bar mitzvahs? And what I found was through research was it had elements of Zoroastrianism. And Zoroastrianism is like some ancient Persian monotheistic worship of their deity, and their deity also comes with a devil. Now, if you know anything about ancient Persia, they say online that it has something to do with Iran or somewhere in the Middle East. But you know, you should know that ancient Persia started off in Central Africa. If you look up the maps and look up Media or Medra, it's in Central Africa. Media and Medra, or Medai, is the Persian Empire. Why? Because Japheth's son, or Japheth's descendant, Medai, did not want to stay in a land that was for the children of Japheth. He went down into the land of Shem, which is in Central Africa. Shem was given the habitable earth. If you read Yasher or Jubilees, it would tell you. All you got to do is look up Medai, and it will show you that Medai did not want to live in the land that he was given for a lot. He wanted to live in the land of Shem. And so he married into the Shemitic bloodline. So if you can imagine, if Noah, being albino, Ham and Shem, Ham been made dark, and then Shem been made dark but calmly, and then Japheth made entirely white, which means the albinoism was passed on through Japheth. Japheth staying in a colder region, and of course the interbreeding with Neanderthal, or interbreeding with a species that was not human, they became what you see as the European. So if you take Medai, he may have already been a little lighter. If they're reproducing amongst themselves, they're just passing on this albinoism gene to when they are a paler color. So he comes down into Africa, Central Africa, and he blends in with the bloodline of Shem, which is dark but calmly. So this is where you get the very first ancient Persians. The Persians started off as black, basically, but obviously light-skinned black. That's what the Persians started off as. And he wanted to be in the land of Shem all his days. So this is where the ancient Persians come from. And of course, during the book of Esther and all the closeness of the Israelites, some of their ordinances or some of their beliefs, we must have rubbed off on them. The same thing with the Canaanites, and I'm going to get to that later. So when I looked up the Zoroastrianism beliefs, they were the ones that the information that I saw was crediting them for doing the very first bar mitzvahs. So it's not our thing. You know, obviously, just like we taught the Ashkenazi Jews, they learned from our customs and they go on and made their own customs, like the nine menorah branch and so forth. You know, that people are taking from us and, of course, making denominations and other religions and other beliefs out of the one true worship of the Most High Yahuwah. That's why I said you have to scale everything down. You have to rip it all down and get to the very source of how these things came to be. It's almost the same thing with Kwanzaa. If you ever looked up how Kwanzaa was started, it was started by some brother in Maryland, some African brother in Maryland, around 1966. And you know, if you look at what they call it, the Sonora, or it's a lamp that Kwanzaa uses, and you would have guessed it, it's a 9-branch candle. It's called the Mishuma Saba. They use red, black, and green colors to symbolize African American history. Black for the people, red for their struggle, and green for the future hope that grows from it. They are lit nightly in a 7-branch holder called the Kanara, with one black unity in the center. Three red for struggle on the left, green for the hope on the right, which is basically a menorah. That's all it is. And some brother made this up in 1966 in America. So where did he get this from? He must have got it or known that the menorah is ours. So like I said, if you shred it down, anything that you believe or anything you have questions about, shred it down to its most finite atom. Shred it all down to grain, and you'll find out it all comes from the Most High Yahuwah. And then you can decide for yourself if it's something that you want to do or something you don't want to do. But if it's not in scripture, we shouldn't be doing it. We shouldn't do any customs or traditions that are really not in scripture or mentioned in scripture. Because I guarantee you, those customs and those traditions are somewhat being used as a cover-up for a god or ancient god in that time that the Most High has destroyed a nation over. Sister Ayana brought to my attention about the community, the Israelite community, trying to reprimand people who are using Elohim, because they say it's for the Canaanite God and for that Canaanite God Yahweh. And again, where do you think the Canaanites got the knowledge or the understanding to start calling their God El and Yahweh if they weren't just around us all the time? Where do you think they get this from? They wouldn't just make this up on their own. They got it from listening to us, being around us. And so they thought that while we trying to get into their worship, they trying to get into our worship because they seen the protection. They seen the fear of the Most High Yahuwah. So we over trying to jump, we trying to jump ship to go into their foolishness to be destroyed. And they trying to jump ship to go into come into our worship to be saved. It's truly hilariously ironic. And then I've gotten this too. People have emailed me and said, "Oh, brother, you shouldn't be using El or Elohim. It's Canaanite deity, blah, 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 blah." And then they say, "You should use Elohim, or whatever version, whatever Arabic version that they're now pushing." And I just think people are going too far into trying to find the name or what name to call the Father or call the Son, and you're just creating more confusion. Because why would you then go from if even if it was a Canaanite spelling, why would you jump ship to go from there to go to the Arabic version of the Most High Yahuwah? Why would you do that? So you're basically going after what your slave masters, which is the Arab slave trade, you're going after what your slave masters would call their God. So you're just going, you're bouncing around. That's all you're doing, bouncing around trying to be distinct from one thing, and you jump into something else with no understanding and no knowledge. So I told the sister, I was like, "I just do my best. If I'm offending the Most High by using Elohim or El, I do my best to just say Yahuwah anyway. Instead of saying Elohim said this, I'm just gonna say Yahuwah. Adonai Yahuwah, Yahuwah Elohaka, Yahuwah Elohanu. Like, I'd rather just say that and just save myself the trouble." And I try to do that when I read the scriptures on this show. But I don't know if any of you have gone through the same type of struggle, or if somebody came to you and say, "Well, why you keep saying El if it's Al?" I already seen that translation being put into explanations of the Most High's word and all that. I'm just The sister found out this way I found out, that it was Arabic, and all y'all doing just switching nation to nation to nation to nation. Who knows? From the next month on, we're going to be calling it something else. Like, it'll never stop. And that's trying to search for little tiny things instead of just looking at the big picture of what really is. I mean, obviously, if you look at the names of some of the Israelites, like Daniel, is Daniel, and it's L on the end of it. If you look at some of the archangels, like Gabriel and Michael, they have L in their name. So I know it ain't Al, you know, I know it ain't the Arabic Al, so I don't know. To each his own, really, to each his own. This whole thing is funny about entertainment, like the Anthony Joshua and Jake Paul fight. Well, now people are saying that Anthony Joshua forgot about the script. Fam, it was always a script. It was just time for an embarrassment ritual. Just like Andrew Tate. How can Andrew Tate and Jake, maybe two of the most hated or most annoying streamers or internet personalities, they both met their demise close to each other? Andrew Tate being, you know, beaten by Chase D'Amore. And if you saw Chase D'Amore, you're like, ain't no way this brother is a fighter. Just the way he was punching. And then they made him wear pink boxing gloves at that. And of course, you know, Anthony Joshua and Jake Paul fight, he had to make it last six rounds. That's their number. He went down in the sixth round. So he basically had to stay on his feet all the way through the sixth round. If you watch that fight, it was sloppy. He was falling, tripping all over the place. He was running around because he didn't want to fall down before the sixth round. So that's why he was staying away for so long. But as soon as that sixth round hit, he was comfortable being up against that rope, knowing when it was his time to fall to the ground or fall to the mat. And like, people don't understand the difference between AI and reality. They don't understand the difference between scripted and non-scripted. And now, because they're throwing scripted in front of your face all the time, now people are joking and laughing about it, but they don't really know what's real and what's scripted anymore. So you're relying on them to make fun of it. So you're like, oh, this has to be scripted, or I don't know if it's scripted. So it just confuses you. This is the state of unconsciousness that the Most High has prophesied was going to come. And you see how it's coming. It's coming through AI. It's coming from them, you know, doing the revelation of the method in front of your face, and they know that you can't discern between reality and AI anymore. They know this because they know that the Most High has given us the Ruach to prophesy, to interpret dreams and visions. But when you ain't seeking Him after a while, you lose that ability. You lose that Ruach. Through sin, you lose it. The Most High has poured out His Ruach upon all flesh. That means it's up to you to keep it. I don't think He pouring out his Ruach upon all flesh and then allow that Ruach to stay with unrighteous acts over and over and over again. So this is what they know. They know after a while that people aren't going to be able to discern from what's real and what's not. It's just why they keep throwing it in your face. It's why if you watch college football or the NFL, it's blatantly being shown that it's, I don't even say rigged, it's blatantly being shown that they are managing it for an outcome. This is why gambling, you see more celebrities doing gambling commercials than you have in the last 4 or 5 years. Like, they really want you to go for broke. And they want to get rich before they know this system has to reset itself. And I think when it resets itself, I think it's harder for you to be able to track bets anymore. I'm pretty sure you could track the bets, but obviously it's different when you can walk in the cage with cash and be like, here, I'm betting on this and get that money back. I think they want everything digital, so you know all the transactions. Like, it ain't going to be no, you know, second or third or fourth or fifth man, and then you get your money. That's how, well, I think they want the transactions to be known. That's just, which is why they're pushing gambling so hard. They want you all up in the wash of that. But other brother wanted me to bring out in the comment section, he wanted me to talk about the fourth book of Ezra, chapter 14. He gave me small verses, but I'm going to read the whole chapter. Not the whole chapter, but I'm going to read 1 through 17. And it came to pass upon the third day, I sat under an oak. I might as well tell you this now because of this confirmation. We ended up naming our son Oak Yahoo. His name is Oak Yehuda Johnson, but between me and him, I'm calling him Oak Yahoo. And behold, there came a voice out of a bush over against me and said, Ezra, Ezra. And I said, here am I, Yahuwah. And I stood up upon my feet. Then said he unto me, in the thorn bush I did manifestly reveal myself unto Moshe, and talk with him when my people served in Mitzrayim. And I sent him and led my people out of Mitzrayim, and brought him up to the mount of where I held him by me a long season, and told him many wondrous things, and showed him the secrets of the times and the end, and commanded him, saying, these words shall you declare, and these shall you hide. Now I say unto you, that you lay up in your heart the signs that I have showed, and the dreams that you have seen, and the interpretations which you have heard. For you shall be taken away from all, and from henceforth you shall remain with my son, and with such as be like you, until the times be ended. Ezra is a Levitical priest who from his youth has never strayed from the Most High's Torah. And you know when it says in Leviticus or in Exodus or Deuteronomy that the Levites are the Most High's inheritance. The reason why they don't have land on this earth because their inheritance, their lot, their land is in heaven. Ezra is just one of the very few Levitical priests that were taken up not being able to see death. True rapture. And he was chosen because he was obedient to the Most High's word. So it's insane to me that Christians believe that through all their pagan festivals, their pagan holidays, and their eating of unclean foods and disobedient to the Torah, they believe that they follow a doctrine that's going to ensure them that they see none of the tribulation, that they are raptured away up in the clouds with the Most High Son. You can't find anywhere in scripture where a Christian is said to be in heaven. I know that there are 144,000 Israelites, men that are going to be redeemed from the earth, that's going to be coming back with the most, with Yahusha. I know that there are 144,000 Israelites who are going to be guarded from tribulation. I know that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who is Yasharel, they and the prophets are said to be in heaven. I even know that there's a thief or a man that was crucified with Yahusha, that Yahusha told him, because you believed in me, I'm going to walk you through the gates myself. And that should tell you that he wasn't part of any religion. So if a man who was in trouble in his last days on earth, that he knew that Yahusha was the Son of the Most High, he will be able to get to go to heaven, but people who have been in religions all their life will be kicked out of heaven, and there'll be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. That is a sad story for people who don't want to really go into the scriptures and look for themselves, that a man that was crucified with Yahusha will go into heaven only because he was not in a religion. And that people who are in religions all their life talking about how they know Jesus, love Jesus, and celebrate Jesus on Christmas have no shot of ever getting in. It's pathetic. It is a waste of life to not have this understanding. So anyway, back to scriptures. For the world has lost its youth, and the times begin to wax old. For the world is divided into 12 parts, and the 10 parts of it are gone already, and half a 10th part. So 10 and a half parts are already gone, and this is maybe 2,000 years ago. So we must be right at the cusp of the consummation of times. And there remains that which is after the half of the 10th part. Now therefore, set your house in order and reprove your people. Comfort such of them as be in trouble, and now renounce corruption. Renouncing corruption is not renouncing corruption as what you would think politically. Renouncing corruption is renounce the corruption or the corrupting of scriptures, corrupting of verses, corrupting of the way, corrupting of the narrow path. Let go from your mortal thoughts. Cast away the burdens of man. Put off now the weak nature. This is something a lot of us, especially men who are basically being raised by this feminine energy in this system. That you, some of you, I know you young men, some of you don't have fathers, and some of you have never been in environments where it's been overly masculinized and you kind of dealing with all this feminine energy around. Letting go of your mortal thoughts and cast away the burdens of man and put off now that weak nature is worrying. Is the emotion of worrying, thinking that if you worry more, you'll be able to fix it. If you think about it more, it'll be able to be fixed through whatever means or strength or knowledge you have of fixing whatever issue. And sometimes these issues are out of your hand. Sometimes it's not meant for you to fix anything, but to sit still and let him who you confide in, and who you seek shelter under to fix it for you. This is something that's a struggle for all of us. Because we see this world decaying. We see it become weak. We also see wickedness beginning to wax strong. And it seems that wickedness has more power than righteousness. Because the verses I have read, it makes it seem like righteousness will have to suffer worse than wickedness would have to suffer. And that wickedness will suffer only after everything is done. And while righteousness will suffer all the way through until the day of judgment. But the reason why we pray, the reason why we do the feast days, the reason why we praise and worship the Most High Yahuwah is hopefully he hears us, sees us, have mercy on us, but also try us through our faith that we must go through certain situations and trials and tribulations to prove our faith for the bigger test to come. And set aside the thoughts that are most heavy unto you, and haste you to flee from these times. For yet greater evils than those which you have seen happen shall be done hereafter. For look how much the world shall be weaker through age, so much the more shall evils increase upon them that dwell therein. So it's nothing we could do. It's going to get more wicked. It's going to get more violent. It's going to be more bloodshed. It's going to be more corruption, stealing, theft, lying. It's going to be more of that. Prepare your ruach now for that. Prepare your ruach for the worst case scenarios. That's what I have to prepare for. Preparing for if it don't go the way you want it to go. What will you do? What if you don't get the thing that you're waiting on? What do you do? You thought you're going to be blessed here. Then you have to struggle a little bit longer to get to that blessing. What do you do then? There's no sense of worrying about it. What will happen will happen. But to go back to Moshe, when we thought that only Moshe got the symbolism of the burning bush, Ezra got it too. And it made me think about why in Jude 1, chapter 1, verse 9, when it talks about how the archangel Michael didn't accuse or didn't insult Satan when they contended for the body of Moshe, that he just said, Yahuwah rebuke you, because he didn't want to share in the sin of talking violently or having all these accusations against Satan and not know his true purpose. I don't think Michael would have known what Moshe wanted to do with the body of, what Satan wanted to do with the body of Moshe. But I have an idea of why I think Satan wanted Moshe's body. Did Satan know that if he resurrected Moshe, they wouldn't believe or have a hard time believing that Yahusha was also resurrected? Because if Moshe at that point is the only man that has known to be around the Most High Yahuwah's miracles and being able to be an instrument for those miracles. If you make Moshe have a resurrection, whether it be false or not, even if it was just for a little while, he came back and then he died. If you make it be that narrative and storyline, I guarantee you that most of the Israelites and most of the Romans and the Jews that came into Jerusalem would not have accepted Yahusha being the savior, being the one that was sent to go through these trials and tribulations and being crucified and being resurrected. I think it would really damage what the Most High was going to do. Now, mind you, the Most High could clean up anything. But I think that's what Satan would have wanted Moshe's body for, was to prove that there was already somebody who came before Yahusha, so this couldn't be the son because Moshe did it too. Moshe already resurrected. That's the only way I could say, I could see that Satan wanted Moshe's body, was to make him an idol so they would throw off the Israelites for a long period of time so they would never accept Yahusha being who he said he was. And the fact that the archangel Michael must be given Yah's strength, because Satan is a high-ranking cherubim. So his fall, did he lose some of his power to the fact that he just left Moshe's body by just saying, Yahuwah rebuke you? Or Satan's really scared of the power of Yahuwah, that he didn't want his time to end before it was time to come. Moving on from that, I don't know if you understand what's going on in Nigeria right now. There's only but so many bases American can build in North Africa. They can't build them in Nigeria, from my understanding that United States can't build anywhere in Nigeria. So if they can't build bases in Nigeria, you know they're going to try to destabilize it. And we should have seen it coming when you saw Nicki Minaj come out of the woodworks and became a representation of the fight between Christians and Muslims in Nigeria. That already should have told you that when they want us to not look into something too deep, they'll bring a celebrity to mention it and make it seem like, oh, they're really doing some good work over there when it comes to religion or whatever foolishness they got going on. But we should have known as soon as we saw Nicki Minaj, a Masonic puppet, a wannabe Satanist, we should have seen already that it was more than her just being in front of the UN and barely could deliver a speech, knowing that she didn't believe nothing that she was reading. It was even more pathetic when she was standing next to the politician who created the bill for her to talk about the massacre that happened in Nigeria to the Christians. And she just looked uncomfortable. It looked like they just made her do it. I mean, obviously, they're not going to use Megan Thee Stallion because we already seen what she's already been used politically. Like, you can't see her in a political forum where you actually have to act right. We always seen her twerking and shaking her ass when it came to the Democratic, when it came to Kamala Harris's Democratic presidential run. That was already an embarrassment. They want to distance her from that. That's why they gave her the basketball player, which is just another Masonic relationship. They want Negroes to fall in love with and follow them and think, oh, this is what love is about. And then once they get to a point where no one's worshiping them, that'll break them up. I talked about this before when it comes to Negro celebrity couples. They'll break them up, and then all of a sudden, it got to be somebody cheating or something didn't happen, or he just don't want this particular type of woman. And, you know, Negro women, it will fall victim to whatever doctrine they make out of this relationship. It's almost the same thing with Deion Sanders and Karrueche Tran. Two Masonic puppets, they put these people together, and then, you know, I don't know what they even using them for, because no one's going to idolize Deion Sanders for dating Karrueche Tran. It just looks sloppy. It looks stupid. But this is what they do to us and for us to make, for us to mimic and mock these relationships, so we can't readily identify and use discernment what it takes to have real relationships under our household, because we rely on everything by what we see. But the whole situation with Nicki Minaj speaking was to set up the fact that, of course, Donald Trump is going against ISIS, which we know ISIS was created by CIA and the Mossad. So they're going to destabilize Nigeria. Why? Because once they get past Nigeria, they can go under Niger. And Niger is the biggest supplier of uranium across this world. And you need uranium to make nuclear weapons. So the Most High is going to allow the destabilization of Nigeria just so these people can do exactly what he said was going to happen, when he said he's going to burn this world up, he's going to recompense upon their own heads their disasters, so you got to let them do it. I know some of us get into, oh, things are happening over there with black folk. It ain't our folk over there. It's only the remnant is going to be awakened. Don't get so attached to whatever happens in Africa that you feel deeply for it when it comes to destruction and the eradication of certain people. This all has to come. This is also putting off that weak nature of looking at certain topics and situations with race or color. You have to understand, through nation, some of those Nigerians aren't our people. They are Hamites. And you don't know that the Most High is using this for them to destabilize that area. So then when we come back to our given land, they will already be rooted out, destroyed. Mind you, the Most High has to do all of this to get ready to make the land desolate, to make the land inhabitable, so there can no longer be sin or religion or foolishness in his land. This is what he's doing. And you got to let him do that. I know some of us get so touchy when it comes to black and white issues. No, you got to let it happen. They want you to be wrapped up in the color line of these issues, so you don't see the proper meaning to it. This is the reason why they let Ibrahim Traoré be that guy. So everybody thinking, oh my God, this is the best black leader we ever seen in Africa. We wish we had this type of leader here. But I've seen his speeches. I've seen him talk. And behind him would be brothers with their hands or their thumbs in a pyramid. So he's Masonically controlled. He has to be. No one's that powerful and can speak out that much and not be owned or operated by somebody else. They don't do that. They don't allow anybody to step outside that system to make a name for themselves. So the name he's being given through his works and his deeds is controlled, because they're going after the bigger picture. They're just using him to destabilize it, because obviously you got to use blackface to fool black people, period. That's why we always fooled by Christmas. We need to have a black Santa. That's why we were fooled in these Greek organizations. We need to have a black organization. And we're being controlled. We're being controlled. We get fooled by different propaganda with the Al Jolson theory. Al Jolson was a Jew who was the first minstrel show actor that was doing blackface. We fooled by anything that looks black. That's why they keep using the same propaganda on us. So they're going to get to those nuclear weapons. They're going to get to that uranium. And they're going to destroy themselves with it. This is why they try to set up this little fake war with Venezuela. This is why Israel is trying to make Somaliland a thing. They are protecting ports. That's what they're doing. Protecting ports, goods and services, and controlling the oil. That's what they want. They want to control where things go in and go out of. So if you destabilize where things go in and out of, you then can have a cause for a reason for hyperinflation in the next 4 or 5 years when it really gets bad. So then you won't remember the fact that they've controlled these ports. You'll forget about that. And then you'll go to, oh, this has just now happened. This is what they do. They inch little by little. They move the yardstick little by little. Just like them making an executive order about the Noahide laws. They've already done this in the 90s. So by the time they get ready to enact it, it's too late for you to stand up and say, oh, I don't want to do this. It's already been a thing. So they wait for you to make the outcry, the being upset and protesting. That's why they do it early. So by the time they know, when people don't have the discernment or the care or the memory to go back and say, okay, this is what's coming, people react like they do today based on what they see then, as if this wasn't already in plan. This wasn't already in motion. It's no point in trying to fight this system. It really is. It's no point. We're not meant to fight this system. We're meant to come out of it, not to fight it, come out of it. Once you come out of it, then pieces the cogs in the machine, the little nuts and bolts that'll help benefit you and coming out of the system will start to turn things your way so you can at least have an easy transition from going from the broad way, the broad path, to the narrow path. And if you feel any type of trials and tribulation, that mostly has to do with your own ruach, your pride, your ego, and your old way versus your new way. We've been so comfortable doing it our older ways that sometimes those old ways come up when we get tried, when we get pressured. We're like, oh, I remember when I was pressured in the world, this is how I react to it. And we would try to fight these pressures using our old ways, but with a new ruach. This is why the Yahusha talked about the new wineskins and the old wineskins and why the old way was better other than the new way. You can't mix the two. You can't come into the fullness of the gospel and try to use your old ways to fix new situations, because those new situations are built, or they come to you to be built up in front of you for you to use your new ruach. So how are you going to handle it with Yah rather than you, how are you trying to handle it but by being by yourself and handling it the old ways? Those are the tests that we constantly have to battle against and proceed over in order for us to fully understand the Yeshua, and also to learn how to let this world work for your benefit. Truly, let this world work for your benefit. If you stop fighting against it, you would be amazed of how everything revolves around in order for you to pick and choose what's going to benefit you, or not using discernment and not chasing fortune or chasing resource. Let things fall into your lap. Let the opportunities happen. When you rush the opportunities and you don't let it happen naturally according to Yah's plan, then you destroy things that could have been much better than they were. So going back to doctrines, it just popped into my head. Did anybody see the Dave Chappelle, the Unstoppable Nigger Act? Yes, with the ER he spelled it. It's funny to me that people think that Dave Chappelle now is like the light that's bringing the truth. And people had a problem with me saying that he was going to control puppet. Matter of fact, there's only about one or so person that was really upset. I think it was Brandon T. Jackson was really upset that the fact that I was talking about Dave Chappelle. Because Brandon T. Jackson, if any of you know of him, tried to come into the truth and felt that he couldn't persuade people to invest into the quote unquote the kingdom. And so he got pissed off with Israelites. I don't know who the Israelites he tried to work with or what camps he tried to work with, but he wasn't getting what he thought he should have been getting. And then he went back to acting and doing stand-up comedy. I had a conversation with him when I was talking about Hollywood. He felt some type of way because the brother's obviously conflicted, not knowing what he should do. Like, he tried to leave the spotlight, felt what he was doing was wrong as far as putting on a dress, wanted to quit Hollywood, and wanted to come into, you know, being an Israelite. And I don't know what he thought that it was going to be, you know, a monetary gain for him to get other Israelites involved with a magazine and with clothing and all this. He tried to make a material. He tried to make the movement or the awakening materialized. Now, he wanted to do shoes. He wanted to do magazines. You know, it just didn't catch the Israelite community. It just didn't catch them. I mean, he obviously wasn't in the truth long enough, and he wasn't using scripture on any of his pages. He was just talking, and I think that got a lot of people turned off on him. So anytime I post something about his industry or his profession, he defends it. I mean, I'm all for like Dave Chappelle speaking and dropping, you know, some truth bombs with some laughter in it. But at the end of the day, they want you to laugh at the truth. If you laugh at the truth, you can't be upset. That's why they use comedians. I have not known anyone start a war by laughing hysterically. I just haven't. I haven't read that anywhere. So what he said about Charlie Kirk and what he said about Israel and all that, He's playing both sides. He did a show when he came back. Actually, when he came back into the spotlight, he did a show with David Letterman. He did a sit-down interview. And he was wearing black and white socks. Which they were black and gray, but they were black and white checkered socks. It was already a telltale sign he signed over to Prince Art Freemasonry. The reason why he turned that deal, the real reason why he walked away and turned that deal down, because they wanted him to be a part of that organization. Now, he could have been already in the lower levels of it, but obviously, if they're going to give you responsibility of $50 million and more of your own show, they want to control it. They want you to sound a certain way. They want to use you where you can make more money than just talking about women getting peed and pooped on and a crackhead. Like his comedy went from college humor, frat humor, to all of a sudden now it's all about a political agenda where he talks about gays, he'll talk about Israel, and he'll talk about celebrities and certain movements that are happening in the social, economic, or social political background. Now he's that guy. It's almost the same thing what Cat Williams does. But Cat Williams has been talking about politics in most of his shows. But we know Dave Chappelle to not really talk about politics like that. So he's a control opposition. So what he said in some of those jokes, yeah, they were funny. But at the end of the day, like I said, at the end of the day, shoot, he's working for Israel. He tried to make this little, you know, code words like, oh, don't believe nothing I say after I said it, such and such. And he's like, oh, this is the code word. I stand with Israel. So he's already telling you, he's double speaking it. He's saying, don't listen to me what after I say you, but you're going to still do it anyway. You're still going to listen to me anyway because I'm popular, I'm funny, and you have nowhere else to understand certain truths because you won't investigate it yourself. You won't research these truths yourself. You'd rather me stand in front of you and make a joke about it, and that's how you want to be awakened. That's why people will stay forever asleep. They rely on celebrities or rely on comedians to tell them the truth so they can laugh at it, so the truth seems less hurtful. It's like that on social media now. People gravitate more to people who are telling you the truth through satire, through comedy. Because if you tell people, hey, you need to stop doing this. If you do this, you're going to end up in a place that you can't come back from. No one wants to hear in this generation that they're doing something wrong. No one wants to truly take accountability for being wrong, especially when they don't have the raw cockadesh to accept being wrong. So now people just want to laugh at the truth. People will leave your page. If you're speaking the truth, they'll get away from you because the truth isn't like honey in their ears. They can't digest it because after a while, this awakening, this worldly awakening that's happening, it'll start to turn on you. You have to look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, I know the truth about politics. Why do I still choose to show up on November's to vote? If I know about Hollywood, why do I still want to try to be an actor? If I know about, I'm just using these for examples. If I know about the music industry or the sports industry, why do I have to give up, or why do I have the need to still want to do the things that I know that are fake? It turns the truth on you. And people don't want that. People rather just laugh at celebrities and laugh at certain facts that have nothing to do with them. That's what I've seen that's happening in social media right now. That's why it's not even worth like trying to fret yourself, trying to wake people up, because people don't want to be woken up, because all that truth, it turns to self-reflection. You have to change your movements. You have to change the way you think, the way you act, the people you hang around, the places you go. All that changes when you start knowing the truth. You stop hanging around people who are one-sided in the political arena. You stop hanging out with people who all they do want to talk sports. You stop hanging around people that all they want to do is play video games. Eventually you stop. You put yourself in a box. You put yourself in isolation because certain things just don't serve you anymore. And people don't want to go through that. Hats off to y'all. Respect off to y'all because y'all went through that process or going through that process. But most people don't want to go through it. They'd rather post things about Christmas. They'd rather post their body. They'd rather post and act like they're Christians because they don't want to know certain truths. They don't want to be told, like, hey, you're not following the Torah, so you're not really following the scriptures. But the reason why I brought up Dave Chappelle, because he's a Muslim. He's not really a good practicing Muslim, but he's a Muslim. And one of the little telltales or myths that they subscribe to is the Well of Zamzam, which means stop in Arabic. So they believe this Zamzam well was the well that Hagar found when Sarah told Abraham to send Hagar and Ishmael out into the wilderness. Mind you, if you go through Genesis, I want to say Genesis 21. If you go through Genesis, the wilderness that they were in was Rehoboth. No, Beersheba. They were in the wilderness of Beersheba. And I've already showed you the maps of where Beersheba was. It's in southern Africa. It's really southeast Africa. Like a little bit above Namibia from where I saw the maps. They got this well near the Kaaba stone. It's not even where the wilderness of Beersheba is. Even if you use the fake location of Israel, it's not even there. It's literally on the where the Bab el-Mandeb Strait is. That's where they say that well is. But he talks about how he goes over there. He makes the pilgrimage to go over there. Something that's fake. So, of course, they're using him as a Muslim, using him to talk more about Israel. It's to get it all started. Which is also funny because I always wonder why these Muslims have such a problem trying to control women and what they wear, what they do and how they act. And then they subscribe to something called Bachi Bali or something like that, where effeminate boys dress up as women and they think it's more moral to sleep with a man or a boy than it is to be unclean around a woman or a filthy woman or whatever. I can't believe that's a thing. But I'm not surprised because it's the same bloodline. Esau got into Ishmael. Esau got into the children of Japheth. That bloodline was about what? Profane. There's no other profane fornicator than Esau. So if you look at the Babylonian Talmud, they like sleeping with children and sleeping with whoever. If you look at the Quran and some of those Muslim groups, they sleep with young children and sleep with whoever. Just like the Babylonian Talmud has multiple genders. So it's not shocking that these people, flirt with basically drag queens. If you ever seen the movie The Devil's Double with an actor named Cooper, he played Tony Stark's father in one of the Avenger movies. I think it was the Captain America one where he plays Tony Stark's father. That actor, he plays a guy who was a stunt double or whatever. Like when they had, when Saddam Hussein had doubles, well, he plays one of Saddam Hussein's sons' double. He was hired as a double and he had to learn and act and do everything that Saddam Hussein's son does. I want to say it was Uday that he was pretending to be. And even Uday, who was a Muslim, he liked trans women. So it makes sense this whole Bachi Bali thing is rampant and has been rampant in these Muslim organizations. But it's like Baphomet worship. That's why I said that these religions are trash, really. Trash. They just mix and mingle things and corrupt it from our scriptures. But that's why I laugh when people try to defend celebrities when they tell the truth, like they're supposed to tell it. I'm not against him telling any truths, but I know it's for a purpose. They'd rather make money off telling you the truth rather than you telling you the truth and you do something about it. They'd rather you come to an arena, sit in a temple or a stadium, and then listen, you have you listen to troops, laugh at it, and then go home and do absolutely nothing about it. Return to your regular mundane life of doing the same exact things that the truth talks against, that you don't readily pick up or readily identify or discern because you laughed at it the whole entire time. I'm going to close it out with fourth book of Ezra chapter 15, because I think it's necessary, if I'm going to talk about the 14th, to know why we're talking about the 15th. Behold, speak in the ears of my people the words of prophecy, which I will put in your mouth, says Yahuwah, and cause them to be written in paper, for they are faithful and true. Fear not the imaginations against you. Let not the incredulity of them trouble you that speak against you. For all the unfaithful shall die in their unfaithfulness. All the unfaithful shall die in their unfaithfulness, which means you have no part in trying to change people from what they're doing. That is not your job. The Most High has waken up a remnant, and he has given us a called out assembly of Gentiles. That is what we work with. Do not go out seeking and searching and finding and trying to twist and change people's minds. You got to let this prophecy be exactly what it said it was going to be. Behold, says Yahuwah, I will bring plagues upon the world, the sword, famine, death, and destruction. And all you got to know is how that looked is when you read scripture like Hosea, Yirmiyahu, Ezekiel, and other prophets who went through the time of captivity, exactly what happened to us, what happened to the rest of the world. For wickedness has exceedingly polluted the whole earth, and their hurtful works are fulfilled. So that people acting like the Most High is just some random spirit that he does not have a heart, that he does not feel, that he needed to come down as Jesus Christ to feel what it's like to be a man or feel what it's like to be flesh. He didn't need to do all that. He could feel the hurt from dealing with Israelites, but he's tired of these hurtful works and the people using creation in unrighteous ways. Therefore, says Yahuwah, I will hold my tongue no more as touching their wickedness, which they profanely commit, neither will I suffer them in those things in which they wickedly exercise themselves. Behold, the innocent and righteous blood cries out unto me, and the souls of the just complain continually. And therefore, says Yahuwah, I will surely avenge them and receive unto me all the innocent blood from among them. Behold, my people are led as a flock to the slaughter. I will not suffer them now to dwell in the land of Mitzrayim. Why would he say Mitzrayim? We aren't dwelling in Mitzrayim. Oh, he's talking about Deuteronomy 28:68. He's talking about the second Egypt. But I will bring them with a mighty hand and a stretched out arm and smite Mitzrayim with plagues as before and will destroy all the land thereof. Seems like he's talking about Genesis 15, 13, and 14. Because we didn't need to be brought back out of Egypt with a stretched out arm and hit with plagues. Egypt didn't get hit with plagues twice. He's doubling this over for America. They that till the ground shall mourn, for their seed shall fail through the blasting and in hail, and with a fearful constellation. Woe to the world and them that dwell therein. For the sword and their destruction draws nigh, and one people shall stand up and fight against another, and swords in their hands. For there shall be sedition among men, and invading one another, they shall not regard their kings nor princes, and the course of their actions shall stand in their power. A man shall desire to go into a city and shall not be able. For because of their pride, the city shall be troubled, the houses shall be destroyed, and men shall be afraid. And man shall have no pity upon his neighbor, but shall destroy their houses with the sword and spoil their goods because of the lack of bread and for great tribulation. So get ready for scarcity. Get ready for resources to be little. Get ready for soylent green. Behold, says Elohim, I will call together all the kings of the earth to reverence me, which are from the rising of the sun, from the south, from the east, and Lebanon, to turn themselves one against another and repay the things that they have done to them. Like as they do yet this day unto my chosen, so will I do also in recompense in their bosom, thus says Yahuwah Elohim. My right hand shall not spare the sinners, and my sword shall not cease over them that shed innocent blood upon the earth. my right hand shall not spare the sinners. Christians, denominations of Christianity walk around proudly with this, I'm just a sinner. I'm just a lowly sinner. That, oh, it's too good to be self-righteous. It's too good to find righteousness because none are righteous. They put themselves in this box of just being sinners. The fire has gone forth from his wrath and has consumed the foundations of the earth and the sinners like the straw that is kindled. Woe to them that sin and guard not my commandments, says Yahuwah. Woe to them that sin and guard not my commandments, says Yahuwah. I will not spare them. Go your way, ye children from the power. Defile not my sanctuary. For Yahuwah knows all of them that sin against him. Therefore delivers he them unto death and destruction. For now are the plagues come upon the whole earth, and ye shall remain in them, for Elohim shall not deliver you, because ye have sinned against him. Behold, a horrible vision, and the appearance thereof from the east, where the nations of the dragons of Arab shall come out with many chariots, and the multitude of them shall be carried as the wind upon earth, that all they that which hear them may fear and tremble. Also the Cimmerians, raging in wrath, shall go forth as the wild boars of the wood, and with great power shall they come and join battle with them, and shall waste a portion of the land of Ashur. Now, we're talking about Ashur, not the Assyria and Assyria that you know of, but northern Africa. And then shall the dragons have the upper hand, remembering their nature, and if they shall turn themselves, conspiring together in great power to persecute them, then these shall be troubled, bled, and keep silence through their power, and shall flee. And from the land of Ashur shall the enemy besiege them and consume some of them, and in their host shall be fear and dread and strife among their kings. Behold, clouds from the east and from the north unto the south, and they are very terrible to look upon, full of wrath and storm. They shall smite one upon another, and they shall smite down a great multitude of stars upon the earth, even their own star, and blood shall be from the sword unto the belly, and dung of men unto the camel's hoof. I'm going to drop down to 44. They shall come to her and besiege her, the star, and all the wrath shall they pour out upon her. Then shall the dust upon smoke go up to unto the heaven, and all they that be about her shall bewail her. And they that remain under her shall do service unto them that have put her in fear. And you, Asia, and that are partaker of the hope of Babel and are the glory of her person, woe be unto you, you wretch, because you have made yourself like unto her, and have decked your daughters in whoredom, that they might please and glory in your lovers, which you have always desired to commit whoredom with you. You have followed her that is hated, and all her works and inventions, therefore says Elohim, therefore says Yahuwah, I will send plagues upon you, widowhood, poverty, famine, sword, and pestilence, to waste your houses with destruction and death. And glory of your power shall be dried up as a flower. The heat shall arise that is sent over you. You shall be weakened as a poor woman with stripes, and as one chastised with wounds, so that the mighty and lovers shall not be able to receive you. Would I with jealousy have so proceeded against you, says Yahuwah, if you had not always slain my chosen, exalting the stroke of your hands, and saying over their dead, when you were drunken, set forth the beauty of your countenance. The reward of your whoredom shall be in your bosom, therefore shall you receive recompense. Like as you have done unto my chosen, says Yahuwah, even so shall Yahuwah do unto you, and shall deliver you into mischief. So it seems like we have the ultimate revenge getter. We have the ultimate recompense. So it's no need to fight against this system, because what Most High Yahuwah is going to do to this entire world, we wouldn't be able to do, not if we were in our full strength, and not if we had unlimited power. We still wouldn't be able to recompense our enemies how the Most High will recompense our enemies. They that be in the mountains shall die of hunger and eat their own flesh and drink their own blood for the very hunger of bread and thirst of water. You as unhappy shall come through the sea and receive plagues again. And in the passage they shall rush on the idol city and shall destroy some portion of your land and consume part of your glory, and shall return to Babel that was destroyed. and you shall be cast down by them as stubble, and they shall be unto you as fire, and shall consume you in your cities, your land, and your mountains. All your woods and your fruitful trees shall they burn up with fire. Your children shall they carry away captive, and look what you have. They shall spoil it and mar the beauty of your face. The Most High is not playing. The books of Ezra, especially the fourth book of Ezra, is a much read, a must read. It really does set you up for what you need to do in getting your house in order. And to get your house in order, it comes through obedience. Nothing else. Obedience. If you can be obedient to the Torah, you can be obedient to the Ruach. And when the Ruach HaKodesh or the Ruach Chokmah, the Ruach Binyah comes upon you for you to make specific moves and to making sure you ensure the safety and the benefits of your family, it would be through obedience. You can't listen to the Ruach and then not listen to the Ruach when you go out and do your vice or do self-destructive nonsense. You're going to confuse your Ruach when it's time to really hunker down and get into the foxhole and to defend your family. You better start preparing and practicing how to listen to that Ruach, to be obedient to that Ruach, so when the time comes where you truly need to rely on that Ruach and not on TV, friends, family, and outside disturbances, you'll be able to lock in and truly be that one for your family.